Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And yes, that was a bit of shameless self-promotion, and every time I hear that ad, I laugh because it makes me happy. I'm twisted that way. Tonight, my guest is one of my favorite people in the entire world. She is author Jennifer Chase. She is a multi-award-winning crime fiction author and a consulting criminologist. She holds a bachelor's degree in police forensics and a master's degree in criminology and criminal justice. Just one of the many reasons I love her, because that's what my degree is criminal justice. So these academic pursuits developed out of her curiosity about the criminal mind, as well as from her own experience with a violent sociopath, provided Jennifer with a deep personal investment in every story that she tells. In addition, Ms. Jennifer holds certifications in serial crime and criminal profiling. She is an affiliate member of the International Association of Forensic Criminologists. Hello, my friend. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on the show, Yvonne.
Oh, thank you for coming on the show. I've been waiting all month for this.
I know. You've been really busy. You've had some really great, great guests.
Well, thank you. You and I have been at this for a long time, and we both agree that in order for us to be successful, we want to make others successful. And
absolutely.
God, I love making people successful. It makes me so happy. You know, we are almost at 5,000 listeners between the podcast and the live show and the archive.
Oh, that's great.
So when
and I also wanted to remind you, how I first met you. When I first published my first book, I was on a show, and the host told me, oh, there's someone you have to meet. You have to meet Yvonne Mason. I'm gonna connect you to her. I want you to talk to her. And, you know, that was like one of the best things that ever happened, you know, early on, is just getting connected with you.
Well, thank you, darling.
I believe it was 2009. I know time is just flying by, but it always just made such an impact on me. I mean, I love the true crime, and just, you know, it was meant to be, and it's just great that so much has happened, not only for me, but for you as well, and I'm on the show with you right now.
And you're coming back in February. I know we're not going to get to a third of my notes. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand, when I say this show is off the chain, I mean it's off the chain because, yes, I have notes that I want to talk to my guest about, but sometimes we take detours and I don't get to my notes, so we just bring them back and have more fun. So other than the fact that you tell the folks how we met, explain to the folks how you got to where you are, and go, you know, back as far as you want to, the history. Have you always been interested in crime and criminal profiling and crime stories, or was it something that you picked up later in life?
Well, I always loved to write, and I've loved mysteries, but what really started it for me getting into the criminal mind, into forensics and all the technology that's going on, was I actually lived next door to a textbook, real-life, violent sociopath. And it was just one of those kind of strange occurrences where this, you know, we moved into this house, and my husband and I, and the first time I met this person next door, it just started this whole ugly chain of events where he would use his type of personality. He was a bully. He, you know, he could get people to do what he wanted. He only picked certain kind of people that would work with him. And believe it or not, he actually trimmed trees. So he had, yes, the whole gamut of chainsaws, axes, you know, all these kinds of things that you see in horror movies. But I wouldn't fall for it. I ignored him. I was just like, I'm not going to let this guy intimidate me. I've always been a little bit of a scrapper, and I don't run away, at least I haven't yet, from a fight or a confrontation. And he didn't like it. So it really set something off in him where he constantly threatened me. He threatened me very how he was going to kill me in great detail. He would intimidate people who came to our house. He would sneak around the property, but we were so close, the houses were so close, you know, you really couldn't get a restraining order. So I finally ended up, I wasn't looking forward to going to the police because he hadn't really done anything yet, but I knew that something bad was going to happen, or to somebody else. And so that's when I kind of made friends with just about every police officer at the time, and they knew who this guy was, and you know, it just escalated to where I came out of my house one day to get in my car in the garage, and he's standing in the garage with an axe in his hand. And I thought, I wonder if I can run faster than he can. Because I knew, and he was just threatening me over stupid things like the leaves from your tree is in my yard. And you're, I mean, it was just like absolutely ridiculous stuff. But it did escalate to a level where when I was in the house, I figured I had to be able to defend myself. And, you know, what are your most vulnerable areas? You're sleeping and when you're taking a shower. Uh-huh. So that's how I had to live my life, thinking that this guy was going to end up in my house. Something was going to set him off to a degree where, you know, he was going to come in and murder me. So I know I'm laughing. I'm kind of making light of it, but it was just almost ridiculous at the time. We ended up having to move. So the police said, okay, well, when you move, let's just make sure he's not following you. And when we moved, he did find me, and then it got worse. Dead animals on my car, threats coming by my job. I hired a personal trainer because I figured I have to be able to at least be able to fight this guy. He's a pretty big guy, over 6 feet, kind of stocky. I'm barely, if I stand up straight, I'm barely 5'4". So, you know, that's kind of my life for about 4 years. So as I started digging, and I thought, well, what's up with this guy? You know, why are people like this? And so I started kind of digging, and at the time there was only one crime show, like true crime show that was on. I think it was the Forensic Files or something to that nature. I can't remember the exact name. And I started getting really interested in it. I'm like, this is kind of interesting. And then I spent quite a bit of time with police officers on ride-alongs, on investigations, and I started just really learning, you know, what the limitations are from their point of view, you know, what kind of people like this are in our whole county. And they said there's always at least two or three of these type of people. And so I started getting really interested, you know, and kind of looking at it more like a science project. So that's what really kind of kicked it off for me. It did get to the point. I left work one day. Didn't tell anyone I was doing an errand before I went home. And apparently this individual who had been basically stalking and threatening me had beat one of his employees almost to death. He left him for dead. And so when the police got there, the guy was still alive, told them who it was. So they went to his house to arrest him. And he wasn't there, but there was a list. And I kid you not, this is just straight out of a movie. There was a list of people he was going to kill. So, anyways, when I came home, there were four police cars at my house. And I'm like, what does this guy do now? Because it's so sad. So, anyways, to make a long story short, they did arrest him. He did very little time. I think he did about 10 months. And then he was released again. So we moved again. But he's the type of person, I don't worry about him. He's the type of person that just fixates on what's happening, like, in the moment. And if he did see me again, like, today walking down the street, yeah, he'd probably fixate on me again, but I guarantee that this guy is fixated on a lot of other people, you know, issues of people who he feels have wronged him in some way. So I was very up close and personal with this person, and it was amazing when I started really studying in textbooks and things that, wow, it's like they're writing about this guy, you know, some of the personality, some of the words he used, some of, you know, there were days he would, you know, try to be nice. He came over and knocked on our door on Christmas morning one day and had a box of chocolates. Now, Yvonne, would you actually take a box of chocolates from this guy?
I would say thank you very much and proceed to trash them.
That's right. So, you know, it was just seeing this type of personality and things that one day I was out in the front yard and he actually came over and like he was telling me about his family. And I think there was a lot of truth to it. So it was like, you know, a making of a violent monster. You know, it was really, I couldn't like not listen to him because it was so fascinating. You know, he's talking about how silly as it sounds, he complained that his mom didn't love him as much as his sister and just all these things, you know.
I laugh because I know the type of person. I understand that with my
and
the whole world is against them.
The whole world is against him. I remember one day my husband said, oh, you know, so-and-so. He goes, have a good day. And he goes, I never have a good day. Every day is a bad day, you know. And to me, that's just, you know, kind of in a nutshell. And it's how they perceive everyone else. And one thing that really did make me mad is that he would intimidate some of the citizen people of our neighborhood. And there were people who were very, very afraid of him. And he was very intimidating. But, I mean, just it's like taking the whole bully thing times 10. And, you know, not everyone is going to actually physically, you know, assault somebody like that or, you know, worse, kill them. But it's just that personality type, you know, and they get away with it. They get away with so much.
Yeah, until what happens, it escalates to the point they kill somebody and then they go away for a very long time. But what happens with the people that he intimidates, it's like feeding him a drug because he feels more powerful and he grows and he's invincible and he's king of the mountain. And when he couldn't intimidate you, it just literally pissed him off.
Oh, it did. It really did.
Because he didn't fall under his spell.
You know, and there were instances where he would go into the house, slam the door, and I could hear windows breaking and glass breaking from inside. He was so angry. And he was just, you know, breaking everything in sight. And, you know, it was kind of disturbing, especially, you know, he had this excessive detail of how he was going to kill me. And for someone to spend that much time and have that much description, you know, this is not a person that you want. Well, first of all, you don't want living next door to you, but, you know, you don't want this type of person wandering around.
He should have. I don't know why they only put him in jail for 10 months for.
Yeah, and he went to a very minimum security, and that really was because of the type of the violent act. I don't know why. I don't know. Sometimes things go. I don't know. He must have known someone, or they dropped down to lesser charges. But I mean, this guy, he left for dead, and so they thought that he had nothing to lose because he had already killed somebody in his mind. So, you know, that's why. And I still am friends with one of the detectives at the time. And I said, you're still not going to tell me what number I was on that list, you know, because he went there. He was one of the police officers that went to arrest him. I know it's kind of warped humor, but I was just curious at what, you know, was I at the top of the list or –
Yeah, you wanted, if he's going to kill you, you wanted to be important enough to be on top of the list after all.
So, you know, and this gives me a lot of fuel and a lot of imagination to, you know, kind of, I put little snippets in all of my books. There's some little truths, you know, even though they're fiction, you know, could have been something that happened to me. So.
Okay. And you can't make this stuff up, Jennifer.
No.
Absolutely. The truth is stranger than fiction. And when you
definitely.
What people don't understand, especially women, is when they get involved with this type of a human being, they literally almost sign themselves a death warrant.
Mm-hmm. I hired a, he was a personal trainer, but he was a very high black belt. And I said, you know, I want to get into shape and feel like I'm just much more confident, but I want to be able to defend myself. I mean, not just like some of the classes you see. I want to be able to defend myself. If somebody grabs me in the parking lot, grabs me by the throat or whatever it is, I want to be able to fight to the best of my ability. And that was very enlightening too. It's very empowering learning how to, I did a lot of kickboxing, but just learning that you can do this, you know, it doesn't matter your size, doesn't matter really your age, you know, to a certain degree. There's things you can do, and I really learned a lot. So
well,
that's why my heroine in my book, she fights a lot.
She kicks some butt in those books.
She does.
I'm gonna tell you. She kicks a lot of butt. She's a take no prisoners type of gal. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll talk about it in a minute, we'll get to her books, but Jennifer is an amazing person. I admire her so much. She's a woman after my own heart, because Jennifer, like myself, takes no prisoners. We don't put up with BS. We don't have time for it. Not going to deal with it. So, but and because of all of this, you evolved into forensics and criminology, and now you do consulting work.
I haven't done a lot over the past year or so, basically on cold cases and things like that. I'd like to have really more time to do it. One of the things is, I started learning a few years ago, just the amount of missing people. You know, a lot of times they're presumed dead, but just there's just so many of them that it just really, first of all, it makes me really sad. But, you know, these are cases that deserve, you know, I know that there's just not enough manpower, but in fact, I went to school with someone that in my area that went missing in 91. And, you know, that still is like, it's like more people I talk to, they either know someone or have a friend of a friend or someone who's disappeared. And
sadly, with the technology that we have now, not only does it make crimes, I don't want to say easier because no crime is easy to solve, but we have more availability with DNA and forensic science to solve crimes that we didn't have years ago, but it also makes the criminal more available to pick their victims.
Right. Well, and one of the downside to some of these shows that they show on TV, you know, solving these crimes, is they're also kind of showing anybody who is going to commit a crime kind of what not to do. So it's the only thing, the only part of it that bothers me a little bit. You know,
well, that's true.
Usually they make mistakes, but it's there somewhere. But it also kind of, you know, has a downside to that, like, you know, where somebody might not make sure that they kill the victims and, or, you know, kill anybody that can identify them or whatever. It just kind of shows them what not to do. So.
But on the flip side of that, most murderers as well as serial killers, as you know, have this idea that
they're smarter.
They're smarter than the average bear, and they're not going to get caught anyway until they get sloppy. And they always get sloppy.
They always get sloppy.
They get overconfident.
Right.
And it may take a minute, but they will get sloppy, as we all know. Getting back to, let's don't talk about the books yet, because one of... I like to keep people in suspense. I'm so evil.
They're like, wait a minute, what does she write?
You just have to wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen, because my friend Jennifer has a secret weapon. And this secret weapon is absolutely awesome. And if she'd had this secret weapon when she lived next door to this sociopath that should have been drowned at birth, It would have taken one knock on the door, and that would have been all she wrote. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Tell the people about your secret weapon and how you acquired this secret weapon.
Well, I've always been, ever since I was just teeny tiny, I've loved animals. And my secret weapon is a 72-pound German Shepherd from the Czech Republic, and he was a rescue dog. I had, I've always had retrievers and labs and dogs like that and cats, and I lost one of my labs very suddenly, and they're still not quite sure. You know, he had heart failure, but he was a 4 years old athletic dog, and it was really sudden. And I wasn't sure if I was going to get a puppy. I know there's so many dogs that need homes, and just I wasn't finding kind of the dog that really fit me. And so I happened to go to this one site I never go to, and I saw this face. And you have to understand, and I know people who have German Shepherd dogs know what I'm talking about, this incredible face of this German Shepherd. He's a Sable Shepherd, so he's got mostly black face and those great big pointed ears and just that intelligent, sweet face. And I thought, well, he's a year, you know, he's young. He's definitely probably going to need some obedience. So I actually kind of wavered whether or not to meet him or not. So finally I decided, well, I'm going to go meet him. And, you know, I have to tell you, when the person from the rescue, we met at this big park and pulled this dog out, I looked at him and I thought, and I took him for a walk, and it was obvious. We both needed each other. We both had, like, kind of some, you know, crappy things happen, and it was just like, I knew it was, you know, from that moment. It was still going to be a challenge, but I just knew, you know. He was actually underweight, and, you know, and he kind of, we called him Coyote because he was kind of thin. I don't know why he was so thin. They just didn't feed him a lot, and plus he's very, very active. And his name actually had a long name with all these German words, but he was Sir Odin, and so the rescue called him Odin. And so I thought, I'm not going to change this poor dog's name because he's had, you know, so many changes. And so, you know, Mr. O, we call him around here, he's just, he's been an amazing dog. I've learned a lot. I have experience in training and doing all kinds of stuff, but he was definite challenge, and but just the most amazing dog. And we're pretty much inseparable, and anytime that I see anybody who's a little strange at the park or up on the hiking trails, I have Odin with me, and pretty much everybody scatters. So he's a sweetheart.
He is a sweetheart. I've never met this dog, but just looking at his pictures, I just want to give him big, fat, sloppy kisses.
Oh, yeah.
But
He wants to be on your lap, too. He's always climbing
he's
on me.
But
so he was only 62 pounds when I adopted him.
Wow.
And which is really thin. I think, you know, shepherds should be relatively lean, but now he weighs 72 pounds. So you have to realize, like, this dog was really skinny, you know. And I guess at his place where he was at a foster home, the dogs just ran on this huge acreage. So I guess he just, I don't know, he must have run all day. But we found out that he did know German. So somebody trained him the basic commands. But this dog with this huge drive, and he should be a police dog or a search and rescue dog, it was challenging. I had to really learn, you know, how to be a good trainer. So, but, I mean, we have so much fun now. You know, it's been 2 years, and he's just grown into this really great dog. And, you know, you might see in one of my books, I always like to put dogs in there once in a while, you might see a dog that might remind you of Odin.
Of Odin. Ladies and gentlemen, when I see pictures, and for a minute, Jennifer wavered about whether or not to release him as a canine or a search and rescue, because he does have this abundance of energy. And several of us said, look, Jennifer, this dog picked you.
Yeah.
If you lose him, he will grieve himself because these two are like glued to each other. They're the, as we like to say, the yin and the yang of each other. And he's very protective of her. So for any of you out there that have an inkling that maybe Jennifer is vulnerable, guess again.
Yeah.
This woman's got it together, and she can take care of herself.
That's for sure. That's for sure. And, you know, he's, like I said, it was, I just didn't want to be really selfish. I thought if this dog is something that really, you know, could help and really be one of these, you know, top dogs, you know, why should I hang on to him? So I did. I wavered around, like, what was, you know, best for him. And then he sits on me and looks at me like, I love it right here. So, you know.
But you could also take him. You could also take him and use him in search and rescue with you as the person that does it with him.
That's true.
The handler.
It does take, you know, quite a bit of time. There's a lot of training actually involved. But we did, I have a friend, you know, a couple trainers that I've used with Odin, and we have been doing just a few of the tracking and, you know, that type of thing, and he loves it. He's just, you know, you show him something, he's just amazing. I think for the most part, most German Shepherds are. If they, you know, especially if they come from more of a working line. I mean, I didn't go out, I don't care if a dog is, you know, purebred or not. He just happened to be one. And it's been a lot of fun. And like I said, it's really kind of, he's taught me a lot, not only about myself. I was telling Yvonne earlier, I've learned a lot more of what patience really means dealing with him. But and plus,
okay,
I've met
now.
Other people who have German Shepherds, and you know, they are really a one-person dog. Not that
they don't love
the whole family, but once they bond with that person, you know, that's their person for life.
And
so.
And they never waver from that either. You can forget it. So now, ladies and gentlemen, now that you know about my friend Jennifer Chase, and you know that she was stalked by a sociopath, that she's got all these wonderful full degrees in criminal justice and forensics and criminology because she got stalked by a sociopath. And as she and I said earlier, thank you, sir, for being a sociopath and living
next
door.
That's right.
You helped her and her wonderful dog, Odin. Now let's talk a little bit about your books, and I know there's some movies that are coming out. The first book you did, was the reason that the guy hooked us up, was Compulsion. Now, tell the audience about Compulsion and why you wrote Compulsion.
Well, during my whole experience, and it was a little while afterwards, I was kind of crafting in my head. You know, people kept saying, oh, you should definitely, you know, you should write your story. And I'm like, well, it isn't really that exciting, you know, but I'd like to kind of write a character, you know, maybe has something to do with it. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, so I started outlining. And I actually wrote a screenplay, is what I did. And I started outlining a little bit, and I wanted a character that was a little different from a police detective or an FBI agent or even a private eye. But I wanted something. It's like, what could I do? And I wanted this to be a female character. And I thought, well, how about someone who is more of a behind the scenes, you know, like she's, you know, kind of been called a vigilante detective, a phantom detective. And what she does is she actually investigates, you know, serial killers and even child, you know, abductions. And she does this all behind the scenes. And she, you know, emails all the information to the person, the detective, or whoever it is in charge. And does this all anonymously. And I thought, you know, let's go with that. And so as I started writing the screenplay, I thought, and I started just typing it out longhand, and it actually evolved into a novel. And I wanted to have it that had a little bit to do with a little bit of my experiences and who this character is. And of course, she's always getting into trouble, as you know.
Yes, she is.
Which is one of my favorite things. I love writing action. And I love, you know, trying to, you know, get out of a difficult situation. and not only, you know, finding the killer and who did it, and try to stop them from, you know, finding another victim. So that's kind of how it evolved. It took me a while. It wasn't that I sat down the next day and go, okay, I am going to write a novel, and I'm going to write it about this. I had to think about it for a while. Just felt like, you know, the story needed just something a little bit tweaked, a little bit different. And it's been really fun because, you know, readers seem to really like the fact of, oh, someone's fighting behind the scenes, you know, helping the cops because they need a little bit of help because they're understaffed and, you know, and they're under, you know, a lot of political stuff and, you know, just things like that. So it's been really fun.
And she doesn't always have an easy time of it either, because sometimes
no.
The cops are after her too.
She gets a lot of bumps and bruises, let's put it that way. But sometimes people are like, she kind of got beat up a little bit. Well, you know, that's going to happen. So,
it happens in real life.
It does. Well, you should know, you know.
Yep, absolutely. It happens, but you move on from it and deal with it.
Right.
You have a series of books where she's after these child murders.
Yes.
How many is in that series?
Well, it's a part of the whole series. It's the Emily Stone series, and each book I write in the series, even though it's progressing forward, they're all standalone, and they're all about a different, you know, whoever she's chasing after. It doesn't necessarily have. It's not just about, you know, child killers or child abductors. It just depends on, you know, which book it is.
Now, you've got some movies that you've been working on.
One of the books is called Dark Mind, which takes place in Kauai, actually. Most of them take place in California area. Is being kind of looked at. Nothing substantial yet. I did have a trailer done by a great production company called Petrie Entertainment, and they did a book series trailer for me, and it just was just an amazing experience. It's like, I want to do movies, you know, but it was really fun. I wrote just a really about 4-page script, and I said, can we do this for a low budget, and we tweaked a few things, the director, and we shot it, and actually we shot it in Bakersfield, at the where the fairgrounds are, and it was really a great experience. Yeah. So
now you also did. Oh, go ahead. I thought you were finished.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No. Go ahead.
You also wrote a book on how to write a screenplay. What made you write a book on how to write a screenplay?
I get asked that a lot. I actually wrote a lot of screenplays before I ever decided to write a novel. And that was just, I just have always loved movies. Movies in the past, especially 80s action films, as corny as that sounds, I think has really influenced me as you know, writing action thrillers. I guess I like the, you know, the big boom, jumping through windows and things like that. And that is the type of scripts I wrote, and it just, when I wrote Compulsion, the first Emily Stone book, I was all ready to, you know, write a script. And I found, I'm like, well, this is really fun. And so my style of writing is a little bit different. And I think it's because, you know, it's because of the screenplay, you know, background. You learn, you know, you're down to the action and the dialogue, you know what I mean? And just being able to write the most amount in the least amount of words, I guess. So that's influenced me. And so I decided to put together basically of how to get your first screenplay out and of a way of writing. And I actually did teach a class for a short time. Actually, it was almost 2 years online, and which is a lot of fun. And so it's based on those principles of, you know, if you ever wanted to write a screenplay. Because I think it's really important as a writer to kind of write in, you know, write different things, short stories, screenplays. I think it just really builds, you know, upon your skills. to understand how all these things work, and especially writing a script as opposed to writing a novel.
And that leads me to my next question. Funny we should segue into that. You told me before the show that you have an anthology coming out. Are you at liberty to delve into that a little bit so folks can be looking for it?
Oh, sure. Actually, it's with several other writers, and you'll like this. It's a collection of dark tales, and it's called Run. And it's going to be, actually, it's going to be out on Monday, on Halloween. And the funny thing about it, when they approached me, you know, for being included, I was really just so excited because I wish I had more time to write short stories because I have a million ideas. All kinds of things come to me when I'm walking Odin or whether I'm doing housework, you know, and this particular short story in there, mine's called 3 Days. And what inspired me to write this story, back in January, my husband and I went and stayed at a place down in kind of Central California at this hotel, and they put us in this room that was separate from everyone else. I don't know why, but and every time I went out of our room to go down the hallway, the elevator doors would just open.
Ooh.
And I'd be looking around like, okay, there's no one here. Nobody pushed the button. So all these kind of strange things at this really nice hotel there kept kind of coming up, and I sat down actually early the next morning and kind of jotted out some ideas, which inspired me to write 3 Days, which is one of the short stories.
That's interesting. So they probably deliberately put you in this room to see if you could deal with the haunted hotel.
It was strange because, you know, we were at the end of the hall, which I always like being on the end, and my husband and I always seem to get rooms like that no matter where we stay. But there was nobody on our floor, and when we opened the door, I swear, and as crazy as the sound, I thought I heard kind of like an exhale. And I looked around, and I'm thinking, if I say anything to my husband, he's going to be like, you know, you need to take a break from writing. But it was almost like there was just something, I don't know, it just maybe it was, who knows, but it was, like I said, it gave me some ideas. And, you know, as a writer, you can see one simple thing and have a whole story or series of stories based on that. You know,
that's
so
interesting. You were the only people on that entire floor.
Yeah. And like I said, I went out to get some ice, and the elevator doors would open, and I thought, you know, there must be, like, some kind of infrared or, you know, one of those things where it opens, but there was nothing pressed. It didn't go away, but when my husband was with me, it didn't do it. I don't know. Take from that whatever you want. So then I was like, I'm not going by the elevator. I'm going to go down the stairs. You know, I started thinking, I'm not getting in that elevator, you know. So it was interesting.
That hotel doesn't have a reputation for the paranormal?
No, not that I'm aware of. You know, it's pretty ordinary, and, you know, they actually had a pretty good continental breakfast there, too. But, no, the room was really large. You know, that was one thing that kind of took us back when we walked in. We're like, whoa, this isn't your regular room. So I got the feeling that it's like, oh, let's put them in this room. You know, I don't know. But it was in January. It was really, it was my birthday, and it was a really kind of strange rainy day, too. It was an unusual weather. All the people said, oh, no, we never get weather like this. And I'm thinking, okay.
Interesting.
So it made kind of a memorable birthday. But I just thought that was funny that an elevator door would just open every time I was there.
But when your husband walked with you, it didn't.
No.
Didn't do anything.
Because I said, you got to come with me and check this out. And he's like, what? So, well, that's what it's like being married to a writer, I guess. It's, you know, you know, always have some kind of crazy idea. So that's what inspired.
But it could have been haunted. So how many authors are in this anthology?
Oh, there's altogether, including me, is 10. And there's some really amazing authors and horror writers and thriller authors. And did you want me to list them?
If you want to.
It's well, the whole book, the collection is called Run, and so basically all these stories, you know, basically just run.
Yeah.
But each story has a title, and I'm going to just go down the list. I don't know if some of the listeners know of. I knew a few of these people, and then I met the rest of them, and they're just so amazing. In fact, most of us are going to do actually a second one down the road. Caleb Pirtle, Sue Coletta, Rachel Ox, Kimberly McGath, me, and Christine Mason, Paul Dale Anderson, Kathy Love, Joe Broadmeadow, and Ellie Rossi. These are just amazing people. And every story is so different. That's what I love about short stories. If you don't have a lot of time to sit down and read a novel, you just sit down and read one of these stories. And you probably don't want to read them right before you go to bed.
Yeah, you probably want to read them at lunch while you're around other people in the daylight.
Some of them are quite scary. So they're suspenseful, horror, a little paranormal, that type of story. So
remember, ladies and gentlemen, it comes out tomorrow. It's called Run.
Run. You
and
can pre-order.
Anthology.
Yep.
And who is publishing this one?
Let's see. I can't remember the...
Or who compiled it, in case somebody wants to look up. Or will it be in... If they look it up under your name, will they be able to find it?
Yes, they will.
Okay.
If you go to Amazon, you can find it under my name, and it's also available. It'll be available at Barnes and Noble. It'll be available at, a couple of the other places too. And I believe it's up for pre-release before Halloween. So, and it's only 99 cents right now. So, you can't go wrong with that. Yeah.
No. All right. Let me ask you this for a listening audience: are all of your books on Kindle and or Nook, as well as in paperback?
They're all on both. Well, they're all on Kindle and, like you said, Nook. My last one that just released, which is actually a new series, it's called Body of the Crime. He's kind of my nerdy forensic guy, a little bit tamer than Emily Stone, but it is not available in paperback yet, but it will be.
Now, I'm going to read the synopsis real quick. It's, like she says, called Body of the Crime, and it's a Chip Palmer forensic mystery. Three grisly murders linked to five old cold cases, dubbed the Flower Girl Murders, to their limit to find a clever and extremely brutal serial killer, leaving a California town demanding justice. The district attorney's serial special task force retains the help of the reclusive Dr. Chip Palmer, a forensic expert and criminal profiler, to steer them in the right direction. Palmer is known for his astute academic interpretations of serial and predatory crimes, along with his unconventional tactics that goes against general police procedures. He has partnered with the tough and beautiful DA Inspector Kat Rollins, a homicide detective transplanted from Phoenix, and the chemistry ignites between the team, both good and deadly. The Flower Girl Murder, say that fast three times, Yvonne, leaves three homicides, five cold cases, two seasoned detectives, three suspects, and one serial killer calling all the shots. The investigation must rely on one eccentric forensic scientist to unravel the clues to solve the case. But at what the cost? When is this one coming out now?
It's out right now. It came out actually in the summer. And I've been so blessed because it's been doing really well. And it's, a little different than the Emily Stone. It's more of a whodunit. I definitely wouldn't call it a cozy mystery. But I've been kind of working on this character for a while, sort of a cross between kind of a MacGyver and Monk kind of rolled into one.
Oh, Lord.
So he's not going to jump out with a gun and, start shooting everybody. He sees things a little bit differently, kind of quirky, and people kind of think it's a waste of time, but he starts coming up with some things that, very forensic. He loves to collect soil samples and all these types of things. He's got more stuff than you can possibly imagine. He does live rather reclusively because he's testified in so many cases where people want him dead because of his, you know, his testimony. So he has to live kind of a reclusive life. People don't really know where he lives. So it gets kind of dicey. And of course, you know, you have to have a, you know, you have to have a, you know, a little bit of a stronger, you know, DA inspector in there. And it was a lot of fun to write, and I'm very excited.
I'm going to be downloading this one when we get off the phone. I have been so involved in my own life, I apologize. I didn't know this one was out.
Huh. And I'm kind of just working on the next one will be out towards the beginning of next year. I'm actually finishing Emily Stone. Hopefully before Christmas it should be out. So I can't leave Emily hanging because she'll get really mad. So.
Oh, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't read her Emily Stone series, I'm telling you, you got to read them because this woman, she is Jennifer Chase reincarnate. She takes no prisoners either and doesn't care who she tells about it.
Well, I think Emily Stone is definitely smarter and tougher than I am. So she's definitely not me. She would do some things that I wouldn't do, but that's
oh,
all.
Oh, you might. You might surprise yourself, my friend. You're pretty tough. You're pretty tough. In the time we've got left, I do two things. First, I want people to know where to find you because they gotta get these books. I'm going to get Run. I'm going to get this one. So these folks need to know where to find you so that they can friend you and keep up with you and find out what's going on in your life. And then I have another question I'll ask, but do the find me first.
The easiest way is to go to my website blog, which is authorjenniferchase.com, and from there you can we can connect on Twitter, on my Facebook page, and you can kind of find out what's going on with what's coming up. And I do write articles about forensic things and criminology. So you can kind of get everything right there at authorjenniferchase.com. And all my books are available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and various other, like Kobo Books or iTunes. So, and like I said, Body of the Crime, which is the newest one, it's not out in paperback yet, and it will be. But I will be, you know, announcing it on my site. So
y'all go, don't do it now. Don't leave the show. Don't do it now. But as soon as the show's over, go hook up with Jennifer so you can keep, because this Body of the Crime really sounds tasty, very tasty indeed, right up my alley. Now, the second question that I ask my guest, because we were just talking earlier, we've known each other since 2009, and it doesn't seem like it's been that long that we've known each other. Even though we've never met, if we met in person, we would just pick up where we left off talking on Facebook or what, you know, talking on the phone.
Right.
And we've traveled this journey at a time when this journey was not an easy travel because we are indie artists. And I always ask my guests, if someone comes to you and they say, Jennifer, I envy you. I would like to do what you do. I have a dream, but what would you tell them?
Well, first of all, don't say but, because if you really, truly, you know, have a dream, whether it's writing books or just having a great blog with information or whatever it is, absolutely, you owe it to yourself to do it. And a lot of times people will say, I don't have enough time, I have kids, I have a full-time job. You know what? I know someone personally who wrote a page a day to write her mysteries. And you know what? Before long, she had her book written. And how long does it take you to write a page? You know,
20 minutes,
and she did,
maybe.
Depends on what kind of scene you're writing, but
yep.
You know, if even if that's all you can do, you can do it if you want to write a book, you know, if you're thinking about it. Because I know, I think a lot of people are like me. It's like, I think about stories, and it's like, well, how do I want to approach this? How do I want to start this, you know? And you can just do it as simple as that. Don't say, but, you know, you can make it happen. You'll be so glad you did.
One of the things that I find interesting is when they say, I don't have enough time. Well,
yeah.
If you sit down and think about it, every human being that's walking around has 24 hours in a day. Now, if one was to sit down and chart out what they did in that 24-hour time period and how much time they spent doing that thing,
right.
You know what I think they would. You know where I'm going with this?
Yes, definitely.
Finish the thought, my friend.
Look at how much time that you have available, or how much time you waste doing something like maybe you watch too much TV, or maybe you're on the—I hate to say this—but maybe you're on social media a little bit too much. Whatever it is, when you know you're like, I don't know if you're like me, but if you really block out that time, like say, I want to spend even just half an hour, and if you look at what you do in a day, you can carve out that half hour. You really can.
Easily.
And it helps being more of a I do outline. I don't go crazy with my outlines because sometimes things organically kind of go off track a little bit, which has been some of my most fun scenes I've written. But, you know, you have to have a plan. And I call it kind of a blueprint. So you can do the same thing with your day. Or say you only write, you know, say 2 evenings a week on Tuesday and Thursday or whatever it is, the time that you have. We do. I know I waste time. I know I do. Playing with Odin. No, but I know that there are times that, you know, we could tighten up.
But that being said, time with Odin is constructive time. Because think about it. Because as writers, even if we're not in front of our computer writing or researching or outlining or doing something that has to do with a book we're getting ready to work on or something that we're messing around in our head, we're always thinking about our craft.
Yes, definitely.
And this is what people that say, I have a dream, but how much time do you spend thinking about that craft? Are you in your car and a song pops in your head that you're
right.
thinking the lines to, or a storyline pops in your head? If you're really sincere in that craft, you can't go to sleep at night because they won't shut up.
That's right. That's why, you know, I was a little late in getting this next Emily Stone out, and I almost feel like she's going to come kick my butt if I don't do this. But yeah, definitely. Like today, I took Odin for in between. We had some rain out here in California, which was nice, and it was a break. And I took Odin for a little bit of a hike, and the whole time I kind of talked to him. I hope nobody can really hear me, but there's no one around. You know, they didn't want to be out in this kind of weather, and you know, I'm thinking stuff. I'm thinking of scenes. I'm thinking ahead, 3 books ahead. I'm thinking, you know, I need to write more, whatever it is. I do that when I'm walking or at the beach or even vacuuming.
Yes. Or even
why is it when you vacuum, these great ideas come to you? It's the funniest thing.
Because everything else is blocked out from the noise from the vacuum.
I think you're right. And it's just such a, you know, kind of, just a mode that you're in. It's automatic mode. You're vacuuming, and just your. I think your mind is a little bit freer.
Mm-hmm. Because it's not cluttered. We, and this is another thing that people do. They clutter their minds with unnecessary things. They worry about things they can't do anything about. They
right.
worry about things they don't have any business worrying about because it's none of their business to worry about it. They worry about things they can fix when
yes.
they just need to go fix them and move on. So
well, you know, I had to learn a simple thing a few years ago because I was starting to get really anxious all the time, not to the point of, you know, where total panic attack, but just getting kind of anxiety feelings. And I thought, I must be worrying about things. And so living in the moment has helped me
yes.
so much. And it sounds so simple, but it's really helped me a lot because I'm just obviously type A personality, and there's just a lot of things I want to do, and it's like you have to just calm down and just, you know, focus. I'm kind of like Odin in that regard, you know, just focus. And
just focus on,
you know,
what,
and
you
it's really helped me, but you know, why not ride in the moment?
Exactly.
You know, and that's exactly, you know, how I look at it. You know, it's hard to keep focused because you're thinking about a lot of other storylines, or like, oh, I want to write this. I'd like to write a series like this, or I'd like to write three short stories. But right in the moment. And once you start training your mind to do that, it's really, really been beneficial, not only in my writing, but just being calmer and enjoying things more.
Yeah, because your mind isn't cluttered.
Right.
You can just take it. Because really, when you think about it, Jennifer, that moment is all we've got. That moment is our problem.
That's right.
So
you can't worry about what happened yesterday, and
that,
you know, a lot of, especially in this, especially what's going on now, people are so worried about tomorrow, in the future. But still, we're living right now.
Yeah, and the future may not happen. We may all get blown up tomorrow, but we got right now. So the past we can't change. The future's not here yet, and we can't do anything about either one of them. All we can do is deal with right now and what we have right now. And if we don't protect that moment, and if we don't protect this time, then we may not have another moment.
Right.
So this is what we're saying, ladies and gentlemen. If you've got this dream, and I don't care what it is, I've said before, if you want to become a garbage collector, God love you because we need you.
That's right.
But don't make excuses of why you can't make that dream real, because all you do is you cheat yourself. And you cheat us of being able to enjoy your dream with you. Am I right, Jennifer?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The inability to believe in oneself is so sad.
Well, and you don't want to be move ahead and have that I woulda, coulda, shoulda, or, you know, feel like you missed an opportunity, because we have opportunities a lot more than you realize.
Exactly.
And it's something that, you know, I think about. But, you know, just from, like, when I first met you, I mean, look at what's happened in the whole time, you know, all the different things that we've done. And it's just, you owe it to yourself.
And
anybody.
We've grown. We've grown with each other. We've grown separately.
Right.
And ladies and gentlemen, we, in our little network of thousands of people that we have, we encourage each other. We support each other.
Yes.
So you're not alone.
Yeah.
You just got to reach out. And, am I right? We'll help them.
That's right. That's right. I love it when I receive, you know, letters or emails and you know, people asking questions and you know, whatever I can do. Sometimes it's about, you know, police procedure or forensics or, you know, where to get more information on some specific thing. And I love feeling like I actually help somebody, you know. Because it wasn't always easy when the whole indie thing came out. You didn't really have a lot of people to talk to.
Exactly.
You know?
We just had us. And we're going to run out of time. But you're coming back in February, so we can pick this up. Because we're not
done yet.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason. My guest has been the most wonderful, lovely, precious Jennifer Chase, author of crime novels. Go out and get them. Tomorrow night, my guest will be Paul Hurd, a.k.a. Thomas S. Mulvey. He writes dark horror. So you got to join us at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Jennifer, thank you, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been
a
pleasure.
It's been a hoot and a half. And as y'all know, it's a Southern thing. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason. And remember, if you have a dream, what do we say, Jennifer? Live it.
Live it.
Live it.
And,
live it, live
and
it.
Be in the moment.
Be in the moment. Live the dream. Because
That's
now
right.
is all that we have. We have nothing left than now. Tomorrow's not here. Yesterday is gone. So with that, we say good night. Hold up, yes. Yeah.